Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Good Humans Podcast with me, Cooper Chapman, chatting to the world's best about the inspiring stories that got them to where they are today.
What's going on, you good humans? Welcome to guest episode 147 of Good Humans Podcast with a very fun guest by the name of Josh Lynott. This is another episode, part of the 100 days to 100Ks. I'm running an ultra marathon on May 18th, and I'm getting experts in running in a whole range of ways to give me some tips, but also to tell me their story and how they got into running. A big thank you to our new sponsor of the 100 day to 100K project, Wild Earth Australia. Wild Earth is a live life and adventure store, certified B Corp, and they've been looking after me with all the equipment I need for my run. As soon as I started, I guess, preparing for the run, I decided, you know what, I need to get a lot of new equipment for this. There's a big mandatory gear list with all this different stuff that I need. I need new runners and I need a whole bunch of other equipment. And everybody I spoke to said, you got to go into Wild Earth. It's just down the road at Burleigh Heads from where you live. So I sent them a DM on Instagram, told them all about the project, and they're like, you're a legend. We want to get involved. We'll sort you out with some equipment and, yeah, tell everyone about our store. So if you head over to wildearth.com.au, you can learn all about their store. They have a whole bunch of adventure equipment, stuff from every kind of thing, from camping and hiking, climbing, running, bike, travel, water sports. You name it, they have it. If you're in Burleigh or in Brisbane, they do have some stores. Go check them out. Over the coming weeks, I'm going to be talking a lot more about the equipment. I just picked up last week some new Hoka Speed Goat trail shoes. Love them out on the trails. And yeah, can't wait to grab a few more things as the trail comes along. Big thanks to them for supporting. Also, of course, a huge thank you to Drinkarepa, our brain sponsor. It is Brain Awareness Month this month, and it is a very important month, as it is every single month, to take care of your brain. If you haven't heard about Drinkarepa yet, head over to their website, drinkarepa.com. That's drink, A-R-E-P-A.com. And use the code GOODHUMAN for a big 25% off everything on their store. But most importantly, you can learn about the science. Millions of dollars of clinical studies have gone into this stuff with some of the world-leading neuroscientists. So it's an all-natural black currant drink from over in New Zealand. It's a New Zealand neuroberry that's a black currant. It's also L-theanine, the calming stuff that you find in green tea, and a pine bark extract. It's all natural, no caffeine, but gives you incredible energy, plus also good long-term benefits for your brain health. So head over to their website, drinkarepa.com, use that code GOODHUMAN. Also, if you're on the Gold Coast on the 30th of March for Easter, Saturday at 7 a.m., I'm going to be hosting a Mindful Morning with Drinkarepa, where we're going to give away a bunch of free product. I'm going to give away a few Good Human Factory prizes. It's completely free to come and attend. I'm also going to be hosting a guided meditation, a guided gratitude session, and then we've got a special little event to finish off. So come on down. You can use the code. You can click the link in the show notes that takes you to an Eventbrite. It's a free form to fill out, but it's just a way so we know how many numbers are coming. Would love to see you down there. It's at Currumbin Beach in front of Salt Mill Coffee Shop, 7 a.m. on the 30th of March. Come on down. It's going to be an epic one. Okay, so today's episode is a really fun one with a guy that was recommended by a lot of people, Josh Lynott. Not only is he an incredible endurance runner, but he's a travel photographer. He shoots a lot of incredible content around running. He's also an author. He's written an incredible book. And I actually just caught up for a podcast with Lucy Bartholomew, one of the world's best endurance athletes. She's a Good Human Ambassador and her story is incredible. But he actually shot her and filmed her running a 230-kilometer race through Alice Springs. A run. And yeah, it was really cool to get to hear her experience with him and learn all about that journey that they went on together. So you guys are going to love this story with Josh. I know I did. There's some really cool stuff in the episode all about kind of just following your own path and creating a way to live a life that you really want to live rather than, I guess, a life that you have to live and a life that is normal. So if you do enjoy this episode, do me a huge favor, share it on your Instagram story, tag both myself and Josh. You can find both of our Instagrams in the show notes. But most importantly, if you find any value in this episode, tell a friend about it. Let them know that, hey, I listened to this podcast today and I got a bit of value. It inspired me to maybe get out and run and inspired me to go and adventure a bit more. And that's what this podcast is all about. Sharing people's stories so we can be inspired by them, so we can learn from them. And yeah, if you're enjoying the podcast, go hit that like button, go hit that subscribe button. It really does help us move up the ranks, get this podcast further and wider, and yeah, help people with their mental health and getting outside and enjoying life. Let's jump into the episode. Welcome to Good Humans Podcast, Josh Lynott.
How you going, brother?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you for jumping on. How's your morning been?
Very cruisy. It's been a big week of training. So today I was just like, I'm just going to ease in before the potty and then I'll ramp my day up from here.
Yeah, me too. I was just telling you off air, I've got a rest day today for my training, which is very, very good during my week when I've been so busy. So I'm like, okay, I don't have to do a run today, but I still might get out there and try and get a little run in. But the reason why we're catching up today is obviously I'm doing my 100 days to 100Ks. I think I'm like 70 days out right now. And I put out on my social media a couple of weeks ago now, who are some inspirational runners, ultra endurance runners that I should get on the pod and hear their story. And I think two or three maybe people put your name forward. And I was like, let me check this guy out. You followed me back. You got straight back to me when I tagged you. And we caught up on the phone last week and I was like, far out. I feel like we're going to get along so well. I feel like we have very similar mindsets and yeah, really similar life path and way to view the world. So yeah, thanks for taking the time to jump on.
Yeah, thanks for having me and thanks to the people that tagged me as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun chat. So the first question I do always open Good Humans Podcast is the same for everyone. So what are you grateful for right now, today in your life?
Right now, definitely my body. I think at the moment I'm just putting it through so much and yeah, I'm just grateful for how it's holding up.
Love that. What have you got coming up? What are you training for right now?
At the moment, the big goal I'm training for is Madeira Island Ultra Trail 115, so 115-kilometer race with nearly 8,000 metres of vertical. But in a couple of weeks, I'm racing Buffalo Stampede, the marathon, and then later in the year, we'll have Lavaredo 50K in Italy. So that's kind of like the trilogy of races at the moment. Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know how you guys train for like multiple races a year. I've got this one and I'm just like, whoo, one and done. See you later.
Well, they all kind of lead in, like help each other, right? It's like you're training for 100 and by doing that, you're going to be prepared to run a better 10K if you wanted to.
Yeah, true. So what, you're training for like the 40 first and then you've got your 50 and then you've got your 115?
I'm training for the 115. That's the big one. But
yeah.
And then the 40 is kind of a training run for that.
Okay.
Because I'm like, if I can't pull up well from a 40K, how am I going to get to 115?
Yes.
And then seriously. I'm hoping that the fitness from the 115 lends well for the 50.
Yeah. Epic. Well, we're going to catch back up to your running. But first, I want to get to go through your story a little bit because you're an amazing photographer. Wait,
can I ask what you're grateful for today?
Yes. I love when people do this. What am I grateful for today? It's International Women's Day, the day we're recording this right now. So I'm grateful for the women in my life. I've got three beautiful sisters. I've grown up all around women. I've got a gorgeous partner. And yeah, I'm going to say I'm grateful for all the beautiful women in my life because yeah, while we're recording this, it's International Women's Day.
I love that. I'm also grateful for them too.
Yeah, gotta love them. Very, very lucky to be surrounded by very strong and intelligent and beautiful women in my life. So I'm grateful for that.
Awesome.
But yeah, man, we're going to get through your story. There's some interesting stuff throughout your life from the small bit of research, as I told you before. I don't do too much research, but I know you're an author. You run incredible running retreats. You have a real motto of slowing people down. And I think that's a really important thing. And I'm excited to hear why that is important to you and where that sort of origin comes for in your life, because I'm sure as we work through your story, through school, through your upbringing, there's going to be some moments that have kind of led you to understanding why it's important to slowing down and yeah, have this real zest for life that you have, traveling the world, taking photos and yeah, being an author yourself and also being an incredible ultra runner. But I want to get to know how we got there, so take me back to the start. What was life like as a kid? Where'd you grow up? How's your family dynamics? What do I need to know about your childhood that'll give me a bit of a snapshot about who you were through your childhood?
I feel very lucky to have had the upbringing and childhood that I have. I think like one of the key things that has probably made me who I am is that I still have really solid friends from when I was younger. But yeah, mom, dad, sister, mom and dad still together. Yeah, great relationship with my sister. Obviously, like growing up, it's like we were 3 years apart. So through the teenage years, like bickered and were at each other a lot, but have now like grown into like we're very fond of each other. But yeah, when I was 5, got my first tennis racket for my 5th birthday. And I think that was probably like one of the first pivotal things, because I then ended up playing tennis for the next 15 years from that point, basically. Just went through school. School was pretty chill. Wasn't like super popular, wasn't bullied, just kind of cruised my way through. It was probably like quite shy, very hardworking, very driven, and wanted to, I guess, like achieve well at school. And that went through all the way, basically, to the end. But throughout school, I guess early days, wanted to be a professional tennis player. Like that would have been my childhood dream. And it's still the thing I'll daydream about whilst running. But then through high school, I wanted to get into medicine and did work experience in Alice Springs with an eye surgeon. And I just loved the idea that you could give someone their vision back, because I think it's just like everything that we've ever seen, ever experienced. Imagine if you could give someone sight back. And I was really kind of fixated on that idea. And then,
how old were you when you did that? It sounds like such a noble thing to do as a teenager.
16, sorry, 15 or 16.
And where do you think that came from? What triggered you to be like, I want to go and give people's eyesight back?
Well, I think initially it started with wanting to be a doctor, and I was just like, that seems like the route to go, because I'm interested in health and looking after my body. And then one of the guys that I played tennis with, his dad was an ophthalmologist and kind of put the opportunity out to me. So I was like, I'll take that up. And that was incredible. But then at the same time, I was playing tennis at a high level, and mum and dad were like, well, you're not going to leave school and just focus on tennis. Like, you got to do your academics. So then I was like, all right, I'll go after medicine. And then failed the UMAT test. And when I failed that, that's like, I guess, kind of unlocks the next chapter. But yeah, tennis was, I think, taught me a lot of things. I think it was actually really kind of integral to who I am today, because you learn a lot of lessons of like what to do when you get injured. I had 7 calf tears as like a young tennis player. Played at such a high intensity with such a small body. And I think the lessons that I learned from tennis now, if someone had told my younger self, like, you're going to be strong and you're going to do all these amazing things with your body, be patient, I probably wouldn't have believed them. And I think that's like where the go slow philosophy has really built from. It's just like, play the long game and you're going to like, you'll really do amazing stuff.
Which can be very hard to understand when you're young.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And then one of my other mottos is appreciate the 1%ers. And for me, that's always put in that extra little bit of effort and appreciate the small things, like the unexpected moments every day. And that actually came from my tennis coach. And I don't know why it stuck and had so much gravity, but one day we're just like practicing serves and he's like, 99% of what people say is going to be irrelevant to you. It's up to you to like filter out that 1%. And that stuck with me. And then that's adapted into like this motto And like every day I'll write down or ask someone, like, what's your 1%? Like, what's an unexpected thing today that made you smile? So it's kind of like, yeah, my version of what are you grateful for?
I love that, man, because it's so well aligned with the work that I do. And it's so funny that this 1% idea, I feel like it's so good to have in your head, because it's so, it seems like overachievable. It's like it's only 1% of the something. And that's where with the work that I do with the Good Human Factory, I try and encourage people, give 1% of your day to your mental health. And 1% of a 24-hour day is like just over 14 minutes. And like 14 minutes is a pretty small amount of time to commit to doing something each day for your mental health or for any part of your health, you know? And I think, yeah, I love that you say that. I try and find those 1%ers throughout your day that are just those moments where you're like, oh, that was nice. And that I think is what gratitude is, just building the awareness and taking actual notice of the things that are going on around you. So many of us are so up in our head and so consumed by the busyness of life, by the stresses of life, by the pressure that comes with the increasing difficulties of the living standards and everything. But when you take a moment, slow down and actually look around, you're like, especially if you're lucky enough to be listening to this podcast right now through an audio device in a country that isn't in despair right now, like so many around the world, like there's so many things to be grateful for and to look around and be like, there's probably a bit more than 1% of stuff in my life that's pretty good.
100%. Yeah, we're the lucky ones.
Absolutely. So tell me about, you said once you got to try your exam for the medicine for university, you failed. You said that was a pivotal point in your life. What changed then? What did your mindset go from, okay, maybe I'm not going to be a doctor, to what was the next, okay, maybe I'm going to be this?
Yeah, that... all my friends, particularly through school, said it's like as soon as I failed that test, I just became so much more relaxed. And then I guess what that looked like then was like I didn't need to achieve this super high score to get into medicine, because it wasn't going to happen anytime soon. And then the next step was to get into health science. And then once I got into health science at university, I'd go to uni every day. I'd run, I'd swim beforehand, and I'd just get to uni with so much energy. And I was just like, wow, everybody around me is so tired. Like they're over-caffeinated, they're tired. It looks like they don't want to be here. And it just wasn't an environment that I was thriving in. And then I was probably a year and a half in to my degree, and these cheap flights came up to Hawaii. Jetstar, like Friday bear frenzy, and it's like $400, and I was like, screw it, I'm going to Hawaii.
Where'd you go to uni? Were you in Adelaide? Because you grew up in Adelaide, right?
I was in the University of Adelaide.
And you're doing sports science, but you're like, wait, all these people who are trying to be exercise scientists and take care of your body are coming in unhealthy. Doesn't really make sense. So then you get these little flights pop up to Hawaii. Did you go straight to uni? Like, kind of gave up on the tennis dream at the end of school, or were you still competitively chasing tennis a little bit?
Well, as I was getting into like studying a lot, I was kind of like fading out of tennis. I also didn't really like, by that stage, didn't really like the tournament culture, found it very arrogant and very kind of toxic. And in year 12 as well, I was like, all right, I'm like, one of my best mates, he run his whole life. And I was like, I was starting to get into running a bit. And then I was like, oh, I kind of want to have a crack at the 1500. I was like, all the footy boys are having a shot at that. I was like, I wonder how I'd go as a tennis player in the 1500.
In like year 12 at high school at the athletics carnival?
Yeah. Sick. And then went on a family holiday and just like smoked myself on the treadmill every day in Kuala Lumpur, and then came back, and my mate and I ended up going 1-2 in the 1500 in year 12. And then after that, I like went and joined his run club, and I just found that was like my intro to running, I suppose. And I just found running to be so much more welcoming. Like I went out and was jogging the uni loop in Adelaide, and Jess Trengrove was there. I was like, I'm warming up with an Olympian. I was like, you don't just go onto a tennis court and hit up with a professional. Doesn't work like that. And then obviously I don't go and do the session with them, but the fact that I could, yeah, be in proximity and welcome and just felt this like warmth in running.
I felt that too with the running community. I feel like it's, I mean, I've grown up in like the competitive surf environment. So I feel like if you're, although surfing's like, because you're all fighting for the same wave, even if it's not a competitive surf, it's always a little bit competitive surfing. Whereas now that I'm sort of building into this running scene and doing run clubs and being with my run coaches and doing run training with a group, everyone's just so supportive because I feel like everyone's just trying to better themselves and get faster themselves. You're not like competitive in the way that you would have been in tennis, and especially when you're not like trying to compete at a high level. I feel like just everyone's been so friendly in running, and everyone who I've hit up or tried to ask to come on the podcast has been so supportive. Like, it's just been such a beautiful different environment to be in from coming from the surf environment and from the super elite environment. Is that how you kind of felt too?
Yeah, I've tried to understand it at times, and I don't know if it's because runners subconsciously, maybe it's a subconscious thing where they know that it's just like, it's hard work, you hurt, it's tiring, like you have to endure. And it's just like, if you're gonna, you may as well welcome people in, you may as well be kind, and because it lifts everybody up, because it is a individual sport, I guess, as is surfing and as is tennis, but there's a lot more like pain or hard work, I suppose.
Yeah, it's like shared pain.
That's my like kind theory. Of theory, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like I was thinking about it the other day, like why surfing isn't just as inviting, but I think surfing just comes down to the fact that you're all kind of fighting for the same good waves every time you go for a surf. So as much as it's like a fun free surf, there's still that, it's not like on the running track, you're like, imagine if on the running track there was only one route that was like the best to run and only one person got to run it. It would be a lot more competitive every time you go for a run, whereas everyone can run the same track. It's like, takes away from that. That's why surfing's its own weirdly unique like microaggression, because people like miss a wave and get angry about it because that same wave will never come through again. I think that's maybe why surfing is obviously a very free and fun environment, but it also has that underlying competitiveness because you're fighting for the same wave that'll never be there again. Maybe
I think actually running would be completely different if we were all fighting for one piece of footpath.
Exactly, it'd be completely different. All right, so you get this Hawaii cheap flights, you're somewhat unhappy at university studying exercise science, you've started getting into your running probably a little bit through this year and a half of exercise science, you're rocking up after running and swimming in the morning. What happened in Hawaii? Tell me about that trip.
So I went to Hawaii with the idea of I'd go up the east coast of America as well, and then I was like, well, it's pretty cold, so I went over there, knew nobody at all, went to a hostel, and I was just like, holy shit, like this is not like, I'd just been to Asia beforehand as well, tacked that on before I went to Hawaii, and in Asia everybody was super welcoming in hostels. Got to Hawaii, I was like, 6-year-old smoking weed, I was like, god damn, like this is not where I want to be. And then I had one of my mates from Adelaide, he's like, oh, we've got a friend that lives in Hawaii, hit him up. And I messaged this guy and I was like, hey man, like I need a place to stay, like I was wondering if I could borrow a tent. And I was like, I'm just gonna go and tent in Hawaii. I was like, that's how I'm gonna get through these 3 months. And he was from South Australia too, and he ended up saying like, come on in, and we chatted till midnight. I was like, can I sleep on your couch? He's like, yeah, all good. Next day, like went on adventure, I was like, can I sleep on your couch? All good. And then I ended up, like long story short, sleeping on that couch for 3 months and just paying rent for the couch. And living in that house, it was like a bunch of like college soccer players, but three of them were photographers. One was a big wave surf photographer on Pipe, and two were like intro adventure photographers. And I was like completely new to photography. I just bought a camera before going to Hawaii. And so every day we'd go out on a different hike, or I'd go to a different break in Hawaii, and I'd go with my GoPro. John would go with his big housing. And yeah, we'd just shoot and hike and adventure for like 3 months. And that at that stage, Instagram was also kind of taking off, particularly in Hawaii. And I was just like, oh, people are actually using this platform to do something. And so I started getting like small, like super small brand deals. Like Cliff Bar would send me a box of Cliff Bars and go and shoot them out hiking. I was like, oh, this is wicked. And yeah, so we're all adventuring, but also trying to like grow on the platform. And at that stage, it was wild. It's like you'd post a photo hiking of a sunset, or you'd post a photo of like your shirt off, and it just blow up. So you could like grow super easily on Instagram.
That's deferred uni for like 3 months, saved a bit of money, and you're like, I'm just gonna go and enjoy my life for a bit.
Pretty much. It's like I never felt like I saved too hard, but I never partied, never drank. So I just had this like money. And I coached tennis. So I was like, I had a pretty good paying job through school coaching tennis.
Yeah.
And then I just had this money. I was like, yeah, uni can wait. I'm just going to Hawaii.
I just asked that because I'm sure there's people listening right now. I like to try and make it relatable for someone sitting there going like, I couldn't do that. I haven't saved money. But that's exactly what I was hoping you were going to say. Like, it wasn't like you sacrificed heaps. You just saved your money. You chose not to live the lifestyle that a lot of young men and women take in that age in Australia. And you're like, I want to go adventure and take photos in Hawaii rather than party every weekend. It's like such a great lesson for people listening who, you know, I'm coming up with an excuse right now. I couldn't do that. But it's like, well, maybe sacrifice something else and then you can be able to go and do something like that for a few months.
I was super frugal. Went over there. I landed there with $5,500 or $6,000 for 3 months, Aussie.
Wow.
And day two, I bought an $800 or $1,100 Aussie moped. I was like, I need to get around. So I was like, I have to be like super tight.
And you're like 19 here?
Yeah.
Sick. Okay. So you're taking photos, a few little brand deals, 3 months in Hawaii. Yeah. What was that 3 months like? Epic.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And then that's also where tennis like really kind of phased out, because it's like, I'm not going to travel with tennis rackets, but I can travel with running shoes.
Yeah.
So I had a 9 kilo backpack with like T-shirt, shorts, and a pair of shoes, and my laptop, and that's what I went over there with.
Jetstar only fucking hand luggage. Didn't want to pay the extra.
Nah. So yeah, that's where I got into hiking, and then hiking, I guess over time, continually leveled up, got it, which is like eventually got to mountaineering. But that's what got me into trail running. The photography then, led to a lot of opportunities. But yeah, whilst I was in Hawaii, I went to San Francisco to visit a friend, interviewed at the Academy of Art in San Francisco to try and study fashion. And
how's this for a little curveball? How did this guy that's a tennis player wanting to study exercise science, then falls in love with photography and running, flies to San Fran and applies for a fashion degree?
I love it. But at this this school, they also had a running team, and I was like, well, I'll see if I can get on the team for running, but I was nowhere near fast enough. So I didn't get on there. But after going to like Hawaii and San Francisco, I was like, I want to live in an international city. How can I do that without any qualifications? So that kind of ruled out anything overseas. So then, after Hawaii, I then moved to Sydney. And that's like then builds into the next chapter.
Talking about the next chapter. So that's 20 years old. So you kind of thought, I mean, you could have studied overseas or something, couldn't you? Did you look at the like student route with your exercise science, or had you given up on the uni degree by here now?
I did, but I've always just hated logistics and admin.
Me too.
I still kind of do.
Oh, me too. That's what I'm like. I couldn't imagine the logistics of moving to another country and dealing with all that. Like, my partner's Brazilian, and we're just about to go through the whole process of like partner visa and stuff, and just like the logistics of it all is like, oof.
Yeah, I'm only just getting better at it now, but I still hate it. So it's like, yeah, I'm not even going to bother trying to do the uni stuff overseas.
Yeah. So you get moved to Sydney after Hawaii, and you're into your running. Did uni disappear? Tell me, what's the next chapter? Tell me about Sydney.
Yeah, I moved to Sydney and tried uni one more time. Went to UNSW and tried exercise phys, and just like came up against the same stuff. I was like, training hard, coming to uni energized. I'm like, I'm going to finish this 4-year degree and potentially just be sitting inside four walls, not really enjoying what I'm doing. So yeah, quit that. And then when I quit that, dad was like, well, if you fuck up, like, it's on you. I think mom and dad were a little bit disappointed about me quitting uni, but I was like, I just don't like it.
Yeah, I'm unhappy.
And then, I worked 3 jobs. I was working at a running store, was working as a barista, and working at an art gallery, and then just running a lot, and still doing photos, but not so much. And I think this is like looking back where the go slow mentality kind of starts to build from, because during that time I was like, no, you don't need sleep. And I would sleep like 4 hours a night, get up or try and study, try and work 3 jobs and run. I was like, no, this is not happening. And fried myself for a while.
Tell me about that. Did you hit burnout? What did that feel like? And how did you build awareness into that and make a change?
Yeah, it was just like this deep tiredness for 6 months or so. And I kept trying to push through it. And then when I moved to Sydney, a lot of the guys that are now my best friends were elite athletes, and they were sleeping like 10 hours a night. And I was like, okay.
There's something in that.
Yeah, this is something I should take seriously. So I'm very, very glad for their influence on sleep, because it's now something I'm still not the best at, but try and prioritize the best I can.
I love that. So, you've finished. What was that next little part of your life? If you finish up working 3 jobs and trying to find, I guess, your next path in the world in your early 20s, it can be a bit confusing sometimes. It sounds like you've kind of tried the uni thing, didn't really work. The running's going pretty well. Like, have you got sponsors? Are you making a bit of money from your running yet? Or are you just sort of doing it for the love and training, and just, are you running any competitions or marathons or anything at this stage in your early 20s?
The most I probably would have raced would have been like a 5K or a 10K. Like I was still quite new to running at that stage. One of my housemates was training for a marathon, so I'd jump in for training with him. But at this stage, I was still getting injured quite a bit. But the next kind of thing during that period of time was, there was a Muhammad Ali quote that I read, and the quote goes, if you think the same at 50 as you do at 20, then you haven't lived. And like, my whole life I've just loved quotes, and that I've probably like messed that up, but that's kind of
that's great,
the idea of it. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna write a book at 20 and I'm gonna write one at 50, just to see like how my mind has changed. So after uni, I just started telling everybody, like all my friends, like when people asked what I was up to, I was like, I'm writing a book, like that's what I'm doing. And I just kept telling people that. That would have been 2016, and I didn't end up getting the book done at the age of 20, but I wrote it throughout that time. And at the same time I was like working on it with So the guy that I stayed with in San Francisco, he was a fashion designer and a poet, and I was, a photographer, and had all my quotes, and we were going to write a book together. And so then we kept like writing and writing, and I was working a lot. And then I went over to England during that period of time, and we just kind of went to his summer house. And he was like, he had a lot of like mental health issues and or troubles, I suppose, and was quite physically unwell. So I was like, I'll come and visit you in England. And yeah, during that time we like wrote, we painted, went for walks, but he tried to commit suicide whilst I was there. And that was probably like, that was really, really, really tough. Mm. And after, when I came back, we decided like not to do the book together, and with that we'd go and write our own, and he ended up writing his and I wrote mine. But I then went and like stayed with my mentor, who was like one of my mum's best friends, and she was the lady that agreed to publish my book if I wrote it. Like one day I had lunch with her and I was telling her, and she's like, what do you have? I was like, I'm writing a book, told her the premise of it, and she's like, if you do it, I'll publish it. So yeah, after that trip to England, I went and stayed with her and just like rewrote this whole book in a month.
What was the book on, and what's your book about? Because it is out now. And yeah, what was the premise of it? What did you tell her it was going to be about, and what is it about for people who want to go and pick up a copy?
Yeah, so it's called Why Don't You? Thoughts Worth Thinking. And basically it's 200 pages of short quotes that you can open up to at any day on any page, and it hopefully challenges you to think differently on that day.
Just love gives that.
Something to think about. But the three kind of things which, still ring true in my podcast and everything I do is like, I want people to take more risk. I want people to appreciate the one percenters, and I ultimately want people to go and do what they love, because I think the world's a better place when people are doing what they love. So that's what I hope the book encourages people to do.
I love that. I'll leave it in the show notes so people can pick it up. So early 20s, just written a book. When did the book come out, and when did what's this next little period of your life like once you get home? And thank you for sharing about your friend, by the way. That must have been so difficult in going over to your friend's holiday home in England and then having him try to take his life. Like, far out, man, that must have been tough.
Yeah, that was tough. And I think that was like, someone asked me the other day, like, oh, have you ever felt lonely? And I was like, yeah, probably that point in time, because I was so far away from like my support network.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a tricky time. But from there, where am I? 2018. At the end of 2017, I decided to start traveling, left Sydney.
Yeah.
And
same thing, just saved a bunch of money in your three jobs, don't party much, not a bunch of money, enough to scrap your way around traveling.
I had $600 and I went to, my friends were like, come to the Philippines. And I was just about to start a blog. And yeah, there was this island called Siargao, and there was two images on Google, one of the jetty and one of these rock pools. And I'd just come back from England. I was like, I got to quit everything, quit all the jobs after that. Yeah, when I came back from Sydney, I think I was like, I got to leave Sydney. Quit all the jobs. And then my friends were like, well, we're going to the Philippines to explore and blog about this island. Do you want to come? So I was like, I got $600 and went there, and was just again on like staying at like $2 hostels in the Philippines and stayed there for 40 days. And we just again adventured, photographed, and blogged about this island. And again, during that time, we kind of like blew up this island on Instagram and blogging. And that this is like a key piece because it's like where I end up doing my first running retreat 3 years later. But that then from that trip, I then started getting, that's where I started to get jobs with tourism boards after that. That's where I started to get my photography work. And 2018, 2019 ended up just being wild, like traveling all around the world, Sri Lanka, Russia, Europe, Indonesia, Papua New Guinea, like.
Wow, so just from the whim of going to Philippines and having a camera with you and blogging about it, and then getting stuff run on social media, and then the local tourism or the country tourism boards being like, hey, this is good for us, let's get this guy to come to our country. Did you go to, do you surf? Did you go to Cloud Nine?
That's I've Chicago, been there. Yeah, but I there's no way I'm surfing that. I'm a terrible surfer.
I won my first ever big surf comp in Cloud Nine, actually.
No way.
There you go. And when you're like, you blew up Chicago, I was like, hey, I've been there. I've got one of my best ever memories of winning a big event there.
Dude, that's so sick.
Small world, hey. It's very interesting. You're probably like, far out, what are the odds out of anywhere? Like, not many people would have probably been to Chicago Island except for a surfer and maybe an adventure blogger and photographer like you.
Yeah, it's, yeah, now it's, I guess, got some traction. It's kind of like a little Bali of sorts. But
yeah. Tell me how that works, because I feel like there's going to be someone listening right now that's like, fuck, that sounds like a way better life than doing the job that I'm doing. What advice would you have for someone who is like, because you see all these like travel bloggers and stuff and you're like, how do they organize and get that working? How did it work for you to go from, Chagao, Philippines to then Russia, Bali, everywhere else? Tell me about those 2 years of your life, or a couple of years of your life.
Yeah, I think it was, I started a blog with really not much idea. And my blog, I guess, in terms of, it was just like a pretty blog, basically. And I say it was a pretty blog because it's just photos and basically like a digital journal. Whereas like the friends that I was traveling with, it's like they were gearing their blog for SEO. So it would show up in Google, it would show up in any kind of search engine. And if you were to go into blogging, that's like the route that you would probably need to take. Because that's how you start building up your website views and all of that. But it was like I had, basically I just, and I still do when I work with brands now, it's like, how much value can you provide people? And it's like, okay, I can provide them a photo set, I can post on social media, and I can write a blog article. So it's like, that was my offering. And then what was unique about my mate and I was that it's like we were fit, and the places we were going, it's like you don't get to these places. Chagao is different, but we're like in the years ahead, like in Switzerland and even in Papua New Guinea, it's like the itineraries that we were on were like very athletically focused or hiking focused. So we would document hikes and waterfalls or
landscapes,
landscapes. And it's like, well, yeah, this itinerary, you have to be fit.
Yeah, and you guys have the ability to be able to go to places that some other people can't go to show the beauty of countries. I like that. It's such a unique way to approach, I guess, the travel photography and whatnot, and get your work shown to media, I mean to tourism boards, and get to do all that travel. It's so cool.
Definitely. And then it's like anything, more the more you do, the more people you meet, and just it's always people. I think it's often rarely work and always people.
Yeah, always. It's always the people. So what's tell me the next chapter. You're taking photos, traveling, enjoying life, making a bit more money, so you're surviving maybe on a bit, little less than $2 hostels.
Yeah, just a little bit more. And then I was in Hawaii 2018, had this email come through, and it was this guy asking me to jump on a call if I wanted to do this running race in Bali. I was like, all right, I'll have a chat to him. And I asked him, how far is this race? And he said, 84 kilometers. And I was like, I've never run more than 21 kilometers. And then he's like, it's for charity, it's in Bali. I was like, well, I like Bali. It'd be great to do something for charity. And I was like, how far away is it? And he's like, oh, it's 10 weeks time. And my book, so this was March 2018. My book was due to be published June 2018. And the race was in May. I was like, well, I've just got this book titled Why Don't You? I was like, I better actually do what I tell people to do.
Yeah.
So I told the guy, I was like, yeah, I'll do the race. And then, yeah, that's what, this is my intro into ultra running.
Yeah, wow. So tell me that 10 weeks getting into that 84K race, because you're the first person that I've had to talk to that actually has done a minimal amount of training for an ultra event. Everyone else I've spoken to, when I say I'm doing 14 weeks for 100Ks, people are like, woof. Whereas you're the kind of guy that I want to be around who just goes, you know what, screw it, I'm going to do it. So what did that 10 weeks look like? And what sort of advice would you have for me with only 10 weeks now when we're recording this until I run 100?
Yeah, so I was super naive. At the start of the year, my 2017 and beyond, previous to 2018, I had a lot of injuries and I was like, all right, I'm going to just slow all my running down and go completely by heart rate. And pre-signing up to that rate, or pre that phone call, I'd strung together 12 weeks of running without injury. I was like, well, this is a good start. And it's because I was not doing two sessions a week and cooking myself or running too hard too often.
Yeah.
But I was still super naive and I was like, I'd heard of this training principle of increasing your load 10% a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'll just increase my running load 10% a week for 10 weeks. And so starting at 50K, 55, 60, 66. And at the end of the 10 weeks, I think it extrapolated to say 130K. I was like, that seems doable. And in 3 weeks, I had my ITB just blown up. I was like, this is not good. I remember.
Yeah, it sounds like you went pretty hard. 55 for your first 50 for your first week seems probably a little bit high. Should have built a bit less.
Yeah. Well, my goal at the start of 2018 was just run 30K weeks consistently for the whole year and not get injured. That was where I was at. And then I was like, this is my trajectory for this race. But yeah, my body didn't like that. And I got injured with this ITB. So then started seeing this podiatrist and he's like, well, slow running's not going to work. You're going to have to do some intensity just to open up your stride again. So I really wasn't running that much. But in the last 3 weeks of that 10-week block, the goal was do the length of the race, so 84 kilometers across the week, and your long run is 1/3 of the distance. So my long run, maybe 3 weeks out from the race, I got to 30K, which was still a long way off 84K. But the idea was that if I went any longer than 30, I was probably going to do more harm and be injured. Mm-hmm. And it's always one thing that someone has always said to me, it's just like, it's better to get to the start line 1% underdone than 1% overdone. So even if you haven't done the adequate training, if you're feeling good when you get to the start line, rather than getting to the start line a little bit injured, you're going to be in a better position.
I like that. I haven't heard that before. So how do you feel when you got to the start line?
I had a cortisone in my knee in the lead-in, and I went straight into the fat pad, and I've never had any issues ever since that. It's my one and only cortisone. So I felt good, but I was super curious. Really didn't know what was about to happen. But I've thought a lot this week coming in, if I could give you any advice, or probably my favorite piece of advice. And I asked before going to Bali, I asked one of like my mate's mums, who was like the only ultra runner I knew at the time. I was like, hey, like, what advice have you got for me? And she said, be a tourist in your own mind. And that has stuck with me ever since. And she's like, you're going to places that you've never been before. So you're going to think and feel things that you've never experienced. Like, rather than be scared of that, it's like, just step outside and just observe it. And
I think
for you right now, it's such a special time because you only run your first 100 kilometer once. And so all these things that come up are going to be new. And that's so special.
Man, you just got me so excited. That was the best bit of advice that I reckon you could have given me. That was so beautifully put. Be a tourist in your own mind. And it makes me kind of reflect on this idea of being the observer of your thoughts rather than being your thoughts. This idea of like watching, like, wow, look where my mind's trying to take me. And like, I'm already pretty big on that. But I think that little line of be a tourist in your own thoughts gave me such a, yeah, really nice way to look at it. So tell me about that first 84K race for you.
Yeah, so in the days leading in, it was a group of maybe 20 runners. So it's a boutique race because there's a large fundraising component to it as well. Super incredible people. And at the dinner the night before, someone made a comment like, this guy's going to win in 12 hours. And then someone else made another comment like, it's not really competitive. And just internally, I was like, I want to compete. I'm here to compete. And I went and had a chat with one of the ladies there, and we worked out a plan. And she was like, walk every hill, jog every flat, cruise every down, and just stick to that the entire race. Like, don't try and run any hills, just walk. So that was my race plan. And that's what I did. And then I think probably like 17 Ks in, I was in the lead. And I was just like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be in this position this early. But I was just sticking to my plan.
The hunted or the hunting, I've heard with endurance racing, and being hunted sounds it's scary.
yeah, I don't really like the feeling of being hunted, particularly if you're like hurting.
yeah, seriously. So what, you took off and went out pretty hard. You had a pretty good base.
Yeah, I think because the first like 20 Ks of this race is a 1700 meter hill. So I think from probably my hiking base was well equipped for that. But then, yeah, once I got over the hill, was running solo. It was an overnight race in the dark, and all of a sudden I was, say, like 3.5 hours in. So I was like, well, this is the longest time I've been running. This is new. And then I remember being, I think, 21 Ks in, and I just started crying. And I have no idea why. I just started crying randomly. And I was like, wow, okay. And then, 30 kilometers past, 31 kilometers past, I was like, wow, I'm now in like completely new territory, and didn't listen to any music for the first 45 kilometers because I wanted to save that, knowing that that would be a help later on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I think just from 45 kilometers on, my legs were battered, but I was just like, at no stage am I going to stop. Because I was so worried about my ITB flaring up again. I was like, I'm not going to stop. And at aid stations, I just walk around in circles.
Really? Now, just to keep moving.
Yeah. At an aid station now, I'd be stoked to sit down. But at that point, I was like, I just want to keep rolling.
Yeah, nice.
And
how's your nutrition? Your nutrition, you did well through the race?
It was pretty just bare bones. I had these like little bliss balls, so I ate whole food, I ate watermelon, I drank a lot of coconut water. I think I went through like 10 or 11 liters of fluid in that race. But yeah, I think I must have done all right because I didn't like have any gut issues or hit a wall. But it was just the physical.
Yeah, how'd you finish the race?
I won that race.
No way. How good's that?
I ended up becoming the first person to ever run across Bali from Lovina to Canggu.
No way.
And yeah, I crossed the finish line and I just, the people that were there, I was just like, I don't know what's going to, I really had no idea what was going to happen to my body. I'd never felt that before.
You're that sore and just that cooked.
Yeah. I ended up being on a drip in a little Indonesian ambulance for the next 2 hours.
Hectic.
So, yeah.
Wow. But so that's your first race. Yeah.
That was my first ultra.
Yeah. And how many have you done since?
I don't know off the top of my head, mate. Yeah. But also not too many at the same time because I'm like, the way I see ultra running, I'm like, they do take such a big toll on the body. I'm so young. I have so much leg speed that I'll probably be running like, I want to be running till I'm like 70. So I'm not trying to like cook myself right now and overrace. But yeah, probably since then I do like one or two a year.
Sick. So that was back in 2018. We're 6 years ahead of that now. I'm conscious of time, but I want to now move into your running retreats. When did they come about? You said a couple of years later after Siargao in the Philippines. Tell me about your running retreats, how people can get involved, what they entail, why you think people would want to come. Tell me about the running retreats.
So they started 2019, the year after my first ultra, and it's because I was going back to Bali Hope to run that race again. And that was a fundraising component to that race. 2018, I'd done a bunch of fundraising. I was like, I don't want to ask people for money. I'm going to put on an event. The ticket price can just go towards the fundraising. And that's that. And I was like, what do I like? I love running. I love adventure. I love personal development. I love bringing people together. I'll make that into an event. Didn't want to go to Bali because I thought everyone goes to Bali. I'll go to the Philippines. And I knew Siargao super well from those 40 days that we spent there blogging. And found a place, built out this event that I didn't really know how it was going to go. People didn't really know what they were signing up for. I think they were signing up because they wanted to come on an adventure with me. But I built out these 6 workshops. And most of those workshops are pretty similar, like they've had iterated time and time and time again now, but it's like one workshop is on go slow, looking at the cost of being busy. One is on risk taking, how to be a better risk taker, decision making, looking at your support network. One's completely based on the one percenters, and looking at like small things that you can do every day for say the next 1,000 days, and also kind of like that 14-minute mentality that you have. I look at it from like a 9 to 5. It's like if someone's working 9 to 5, that's 480 minutes. 1% of that's 4.8 minutes. Like that, you just need 5 minutes of your day to change or put effort into, and that can change your whole day. And another one at the moment is smash negativity, so looking at limiting beliefs. But running is kind of the vehicle or the vessel that brings everybody together. That's like the thread. It doesn't matter if I've had people that have never run more than 3 kilometers across an entire week, and then I've had people that have run multiple 100 milers. But all the running is scalable because it'll be like out and back or reps. I hope, the running is like, it puts you in an elevated state. You're sweaty. You're uncomfortable. And it's like if you go out to a run club, you start chatting to people, and it's that same mentality. And then
it's just a great environment.
We go into the workshop. So it's ultimately the people come for the workshops, I suppose, and the network and the people that they meet. Plus they're doing them in cool locations.
So you did your first ones in the Philippines to raise money for your run. So you didn't even profit on the first one. You just did it to raise money. Like, that's so cool. Where do you do? Keep going. Yeah, I was just going to say, and what's been the run out since that first one, the Philippines? How many retreats have you run and what ones do you have coming up?
I've done, I think I just finished my 13th event in February, and I did that in Tassie.
And how long are the retreats?
They range from 4 nights to 7 nights. So depending on location. Yeah, I've got one coming up, which is just like an internal one for all the alumni who have ever, like a 5-year reunion. Because our network is like so strong. I was like, I just want to put on an event to bring everybody back together.
See.
But then, yeah, I haven't launched one yet for the second half of 2024. I'm thinking potentially maybe in Bright I would like to do one. I definitely want to go to Europe and do one in Madeira.
Where I'm That'd be racing. Sick.
That's 2025 goal.
Nice.
But yeah.
Hell yeah. And that sounds amazing. I'm keen to come to one. Do you know Jackie Bell? Heard of Jackie
Bell? I do, yeah. She was at my first event.
No way. In the Philippines.
Yeah. Oh, no, not my session. She was at the Bali Hope Ultra.
Oh, sick. Yeah, she's a legend. Yeah. She's when this comes out, she would have been last week's episode. I did one with her last week, but she has her running retreats as well, and she's invited me and my partner to come join into her one at Currumbin, just down the road from where I live, in June, I think, which I'm excited for, because I think, yeah, I know it's not necessarily about the running, but more so about the community and the coming together of people, which is gonna be epic. So yeah, hopefully I can enjoy that one and then maybe come to one of your ones one day, because I think it'd be super fun.
Dude, I'd love that.
That sounds epic. I guess lastly, because I want to let you go shortly, what do you have coming up? You know, I know you've got your runs and stuff coming up this year. What are you looking forward to? What's the goal for this year?
I'm really excited for Madeira, because it's been a 2-year journey. Last year I raced in Madeira the 85 to qualify me for the 115.
Yeah.
Some of my best mates live over there, and now I've also got a bunch of friends that have signed up for like the 60k, the 40k, and Madeira is just this island where, like, say AFL is in Melbourne or surfing is in Coolangatta, everybody in Madeira loves trail running, or at least feels like that. So it's going to be like, the race is going to be this big physical pursuit, but it's also just this coming together of people that I'm really excited about.
That's sick. So when's that? Because I know you told me you're living in the Blue Mountains at the moment, strategically to be training and getting ready for that. So it comes with a lot of sacrifice to do this ultra marathon stuff. That's what I'm beginning to learn. Everyone just kind of dedicates most of their life to it. If you're trying to train for ultras, you're putting in, if you're running, 50, 60, 70 Ks a week, there's plenty of hours invested into running each week.
Definitely. I lost the question. What's the train of thought?
The question was Blue Mountains. What made you move down there and the dedication it takes to get ready for that 115K race?
Just because of the nature of what Madeira is, there's so many stairs in the race. And as I said, like nearly 8,000 meters of up and down climbing. Pretty much the Blue Mountains were the best place in Australia, or most specific to train for that, because I actually lived in the Goldie for 2 years. I basically moved from the Goldie to the Blue Mountains, and I was just like, I'm not going to get these stairs if I'm running from Saltville to Currumbin. Saltville to Cooley.
Seriously, just run the Goldie flat from the Spit to Cooley. What were you doing on the Goldie for 2 years?
When COVID happened, I went back to Adelaide for 4 or 5 months, and then I was like, don't want to be here. I was like, I've been out of Adelaide for so long, so moved to the Goldie, had some mates up there, and just ran and shot photos up in the Goldie.
No way. Any recommended trails that I should go and hit? You probably know them all up here.
I would just run the border track a lot.
That's the one that I've been running. That's the only one that I've run so far.
Yeah.
But it gets to like this one spot where the grass is so high, like
too long. Yeah,
it's yeah. Like, I kind of stopped there, but I feel like I want to take it a bit further again soon. I've done like 12 k's in, 12 k's out. So I want to do a bit more of the border, but then finding some other spots is gonna be epic.
Yeah, I'll send you some routes for sure.
Are you gonna still be in the Blue Mountains in May?
I'll still be in Portugal then.
I'll still be in Portugal then.
Yeah. Otherwise, nice. I would have loved to come out for your race.
I know. Next time. Oh, if there is a next time. It's so funny. I feel like I'm such a like unique. I guess a lot of people set a challenge like that to do like 100, but so many people are like, are you gonna keep doing it after? I'm like, oh.
I think there's beauty in like just doing something once. It's like, and if it feels good, you can do it again. And if not, it's like you'll take these learnings and put them into something else.
Exactly. And I think there's been already so many learnings from my running. And I think one of the biggest takeaways is like how important it is to really build up to something and not get ahead of yourself. And it's something that I've done so often, being like, I guess a young, confident male who's had an athletic base and athletic career behind him, that I'm kind of like, oh, nah, like I could just go do a 50 next week just for the fun of it. But having coaches and people like yourself now around me and give me the advice of like, no, it's so important to build or you're just going to get injured, and it doesn't work like that. Mm. So being like smart about it has been, pretty important, I think, for me.
Yeah, I'd say in your last 70 days, it's like bulletproof your gut as best you can, because you can get yourself physically ready for the race. But if you have a bad day and your gut's off, it's like, doesn't matter how strong or how fit you are, you'll be derailed.
So, tell me about that. Yeah. How do I bulletproof my gut? As in like, make sure I'm trained when I'm doing my runs, start eating different nutritions and seeing what works for me.
Yeah, definitely like almost keeping a log of what you eat. So what you eat before a run, then when you finish the run, just taking a journal of like, or iPhone notes, like how did it sit? Did it work well? But also it's like, I'd go and see a naturopath and get some supplements of, I don't know all the names of the things, but like just get things that are going to like help really like boost your gut health.
Okay.
This is not my specialty.
But bringing awareness to that is important. I like that.
Yeah. And then again, just practicing like on your long run, it's like your capacity to eat and take fluids on. So start learning like how much fluid you can take, whether it's 500 mils an hour or 1,000 mils an hour. Like what's your caffeine tolerance?
Yeah.
And all these things. And then I guess for the Blueys, just lots of single leg strength work.
That's what a few people have told me as well. So many stairs and climbing and calf work. Yeah. So I'll be doing all of that. But man, thank you so much for taking the time to jump on. I know you're busy with training and got a lot of stuff coming up. I really appreciate you sharing your story. I think people are going to be inspired learning about just having a go, taking risks, stepping out of your comfort zone and just trying to really go and live the life that you want to live, rather than live the life that maybe your parents wanted you to live by finishing your uni degree, or by what society kind of leans us towards. You seem like someone who's really just been like, you know what, I'm going to go and live my life. I'm going to go travel. I'm going to create a life that I want to live. And it seems like you're really doing that. So I think that's super inspiring. And I know people listening will be, hopefully motivated by that to maybe take another risk or leave their job and go into something that they didn't think that maybe was an opportunity for them until they really lent into it. Just like your Philippine story is a perfect example. Go on a whim with your mates on a trip, take photos, blog, and hey, look, I'm traveling the world for years doing something that I love doing. Like, it's such a cool story to hear, and I think people are going to really appreciate it. But I do finish Good Humans podcast with the same question for everyone, and I'm keen to hear what you say about this. So what does being a good human mean to Josh Linnett?
Oh, I think the first thing that comes to my mind is like, being a good human is being kind to yourself and then being kind to others.
think that's all it needs to be. I love that. It's something that I'm big on, kindness, and understanding the science behind kindness has been such a game changer for me. Recognizing that obviously kindness is something that you should just do out of virtue, that it's the right thing to do. But for me, once I learned the science and the chemicals that are changing in our brain when we practice kindness, you can actually use it as a tool and not force kindness, but be more aware of, hey, by actually being kind to someone, by smiling at the person at the coffee shop and actually asking them genuinely, how's your day? It's going to make them feel good, but then it makes you feel good because of the chemicals that are changing your brain. So as simple as it may sound, what you said there, being kind to yourself, having those conversations in your mind a bit kinder, but also being kind to others. It's it's a beautiful way to live your life. And it's truly what I believe to be a good human as well. So, man, thank you so much. I guess the last thing, where can anyone find you if they want to check out your social media, check out your run retreats, check out your book? I will leave it all in the show notes, but just, I guess, last chance to leave me any words.
Yeah, I'd say I'm most active on Instagram at Josh Liner. I have a weekly podcast as well, so would love to get you on one day. At the Josh Liner Project on all streaming listening platforms. And then
maybe try and have a chat before and after my 100, or maybe just after the 100, and I can give you an update on how it went.
Dude, that'd be sick. And yeah, What a Sesh, WHATASESH on Instagram. That's the best place for all things retreats. So
amazing. Well, thank you, sir. I'm going to ask you two more things because I feel like you're going to answer these really well. What's your favorite quote? And it's going to be really hard for you to answer that. That's a shit one. All right, give me your top three. What's your favorite quote that plays in your mind frequently because and can guide you? I'll give you an example. For me, I have two quotes that I try and remind myself every day. One is, knowledge is knowing, wisdom is doing. And I say that in my head as just an internal reminder of like, come on, mate, you spend all this time learning all this knowledgeable stuff about breathwork, meditation, gratitude, kindness, mindfulness, but are you actually doing it? So that's a big one for me. And another one for me that I have constantly in my head is, listen, don't just wait to talk. And kind of that collabs with be interested, not interesting. They're just the reminders that I need to give myself. So along that line of quote, give me your one or two quote that you remind yourself frequently because it's beneficial for you.
Yeah, I guess all my tattoos are my favorite quotes.
Yeah, read me some tattoos.
So I've got MITA on my arm, which is Man in the Arena by Theodore Roosevelt. And basically it's just like, people can say whatever they want about you, but unless you're the person in the arena doing the act, doing the deed, then it doesn't matter what they think or what they say. And I really, for someone that loves words so much, I have a terrible time remembering them. But the quote is just like, the man who knows great enthusiasms or like great failings, but he'll never just be in the dust. He'll never just know what it's like to not have tried. So
yeah, I love that.
And then there's a Roald Dahl quote. One of my tattoos is white hot, and it's, lukewarm is no good, red hot is no good either, white hot and passionate is the only thing to be. So I take that one everywhere. It's the 1%ers, as I've talked about. And then, I've got a shower tattoo, and it's on my first ultra. I had hot, warm shower, texted on my arm. And basically the idea is like, when you get in that hot, warm shower at the end of the day, it's the easiest place to have thought, I could have done more, I could have tried harder, I should have done this. But my mentality is like, when you get in the shower at the end of the day, it's like, you can sit in the shower and know that you've done your best. You've given everything.
I love that. That's a great one. Amazing. They're good quotes. And very last one, because I know you're a big wordsmith. Favorite book that you've learnt? Are you a big reader? Well, I guess it's the first question, but then...
I go through phases.
Me too. I'm big on that. I'm like, sometimes, like I've read 3-4 books this year. Anyway, what's a book that you've read that you recommend people to read? There's always like one or two that you're like, all right, like I've got one or two that I'm like, read that. What would you recommend me read? or my listeners?
I would say, from like a science side of things, Breath by James Nestor.
Oh, it's at the top of my list too. Fuck, so it'll change your life. If you haven't read that, go read it.
Definitely. And the other one that's coming to my head is The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari.
Oh, that's a good one too. I do love that book. That's a great book. Well, man, thank you so much. I could just keep asking you questions because fuck we're very aligned, but thanks for jumping on Good Humans Podcast. I'll leave everything about you in the show notes. And yeah, I'm sure everyone who's listening is very appreciative of you sharing your story.
Dude, thank you for your time as well and everything that you're doing for the world. Appreciate it.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.